You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. What if Tokyo never rose? World War II and its effects on the martial arts. Imagine what the martial arts in the U.S. and Europe would look like in the year 2015 if the Pacific Theater of the Second World War had never happened. What if, in the late 1920s or early 1930s, the quasi-fascist militarist government of Japan had fallen and been replaced with a more progressive regime? What if, as a result, Japan had not embarked on the path of military conquest in Manchuria and China? If so, there's a reasonable chance that the Pacific Theater of World War II would never have happened. If that were true, I assert that the current martial arts scene in the West would be very different, and most probably far less developed. One reason that 1949 is the year that China became Communist China is that the civil war between the Chinese Communists and the Kuomintang government, which had been raging since 1927, was interrupted when the Japanese invaded China in 1937. As a result, both sides in the civil war made temporary peace in order to join forces to fight the Japanese. It was not until after the Japanese surrender to the Allies in 1945 that the Communist and Nationalist Chinese were free to resume fighting each other. Hostilities resumed in earnest in 1946 and wound up in 1950 with the Communists in control and the Nationalists retreating to the island of Taiwan, where they set up a government in exile. Continuing our thought experiment, if the Japanese militarist government had fallen and had never invaded China, what would have been the result of China's civil war? And how would it have affected the Chinese martial arts? It would surely have ended the civil war earlier, perhaps much earlier. It's commonly held by historians that the interruption of the Chinese civil war by the Japanese invasion worked in favor of the communists. In our own universe, Communist China cracked down on the teaching of martial arts by private citizens in the 1950s and 60s, causing many instructors to flee the country. Three major destinations for these kung fu refugees were Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau. If the communists had never taken power, who's to say how the lives of these masters would have played out? Perhaps many of them would have labored in obscurity for their entire careers in the hinterlands of China. Korea is another interesting story. Japan, China, and Russia struggled with one another for control of Northeast Asia in the last few decades of the 1800s and part of the very early 1900s. Japan annexed Korea in 1910 and continued to rule over it until the end of the war in 1945. During these 35 years of domination, the Japanese gradually ramped up an effort to eliminate all traces of the culture in Korea and essentially turn the Korean people into Japanese people. Koreans were increasingly discouraged and later forbidden to express any cultural traits that were different from those of Japan. By the war years, attendance at Japanese Shinto religious ceremonies was compulsory for Koreans. It was forbidden to teach the Korean language, and needless to say, it was forbidden to practice native Korean martial arts. The practice of Japanese martial arts was encouraged. This effort was so successful that after the war, when Taekwondo was developed as a national martial art, its founders used forms from Japanese karate rather than composing their own forms. What if the more progressive Japanese government from our thought experiment had given independence to Korea decades earlier than happened in our universe? If Japanese martial arts had not been force-fed to Koreans for decades, what would modern Korean martial arts look like? The war itself had little effect on the American martial arts scene, such as it was, other than millions of soldiers training in the rudimentary hand-to-hand techniques taught in the American military at the time. The real change occurred after the war concluded with the Japanese surrender in August 1945, and is by far the most significant event described in this episode. The Japanese surrender led directly and immediately to American troops in their hundreds of thousands being stationed on the home islands of Japan and Okinawa. Many of these young Americans, frequently fighting the boredom of occupation duty, were drawn to the martial arts of Japan and Okinawa as a pastime. A fraction of these became serious practitioners. As these veterans returned to the United States, the Japanese and Okinawan martial arts came with them. Some of them began teaching. Others brought their Asian instructors to America. The coincidental timing of political, cultural, and economic events here should not be overlooked. This was the time in history when American culture and economic power began to be dominant in the world. Free education and housing subsidies created a huge middle class for returning American veterans. The economic power of this middle class only grew greater for the next few decades. There was now plentiful leisure time in American culture and plenty of money to spend on leisure pastimes. Through the Korean War and later the Vietnam War, hundreds of thousands of Americans in uniform spent time in Asia, extending the life of this martial arts pipeline. Over the next couple of decades, Asian martial arts worked much more deeply into the culture through movies, television, and literature, and thus much more deeply into our consciousness. As this process continued, martial arts from other Asian cultures moved in and out of fashion. Judo was the first martial fad, hitting our culture powerfully in the 50s. In the early 60s, it was karate. In the late 60s, it was taekwondo. In the 70s, kung fu was all the rage. And then ninjutsu exploded in the 80s. If millions of American GIs had never been exposed to Japanese martial arts in the post-war years, how long would it have taken for the Asian martial arts to catch on in the U.S.? Brazilian jiu-jitsu was able to explode on the scene in the U.S. and Europe after the showing it made in the UFC in 1993. Much of the success came from outperforming American and European martial athletes. Without the major influx of Asian martial arts into the post-war West, would this have ever taken place? Would BJJ enjoy the worldwide popularity it now has in our universe, or would it still be a niche martial art practiced only by a few thousand people in and around Rio de Janeiro? This type of thought experiment is referred to by historians as a counterfactual. Many historians hate counterfactuals. They feel that it is pointless, and engaging in it is a waste of time. Perhaps. One thing I do believe is that your knowledge of yourself, in this case your art, is deeper if you understand the history not only of your art, but the culture from which it arose, and that small changes in history can yield a radically different future. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.